When you are in the Senate Education and Workforce Committee, please, if you have a cell phone, put it on vibrate. If I hear it go off, you'll see me look up, and I hope it's not you. So it really is a disturbance for us if your cell phone goes off. Welcome to our committee. We're happy that you're here. If you're here to testify, we have sign-up sheets on the side over there on the table. Committee, we're going to take Senate Bill 169 first because there's only two people who signed up, and that will be quick. And then the rest of the session, we will take up Senate Bill 228, where I suspect most of these fine folks are here to talk about this bill. So with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 169 and bring up Chris Minich and Bill Stewart to testify.
And Madam Chair, yes. Members of the committee, Senate Bill 169 eliminates the requirement that math and English statewide assessments be administered to students on or after March 1st of the school year. This declares an emergency and has an effective date of July 1st, 2005, and this is a bill from the Department of Education.
Thank you. Go ahead. Start over here. State your name and your affiliation, please.
Chair Walker, members of the committee, I'm Chris Minich with the Department of Education. I work in the Office of Assessment and Information Services for Mr. Doug Costi, who you've heard from before. I'm here today to testify in favor of Senate Bill 169. It would eliminate the date of March 1st as a requirement for students to test during the school year. The Department of Education and all school districts in Oregon want kids to be tested when they're ready to be tested, not necessarily when the testing window is for those students. And the department's committed to getting the best testing windows for students so that they can show what they can do on these statewide assessments. Our advisory committee has actually recommended a double testing window setup where we would have a January testing window and then an end-of-the-year testing window also for high school students who complete their courses in January and need to be tested then. Again, the overriding factor here is that we want them to be able to be tested when they perform best on the statewide assessment. I have Bill Stewart here with me. He's from Gladstone School District. I'm going to let him talk about some of the requirements of school districts that the department places upon them by having a March 1st deadline.
Chair Walker, Senators, thank you for letting me speak today. My name is Bill Stewart. I'm the Curriculum and Assessment Director for Gladstone School District, and I've been in that position for 7 years, and I've also been a classroom teacher for 22 years. The situation for my school district with existing law is such that we have we're on a block schedule, which is very, very effective for our students, and the current law makes it difficult for us to test kids when they're actually enrolled in class, particularly for semester students. And so by eliminating the March 1st requirement, it would allow us to test kids when they're actually in their classes, when they would be able to perform best. One of the things that I'd like to mention is that the advisory group that Mr. Minich referred to has been very effective in communicating with districts about their needs for assessment, and districts have had a lot of input about what would be the best scenario in each individual district, and the department's been very responsive. And I would also recommend the approval of this bill to allow the advisory committee to continue to have input for the best performance of students within each individual district situation. Is there any questions I can answer for you?
No, I just had one, just sort of a comment, Mr. Stewart. Given No Child Left Behind and the state report cards, it's important that your students do well on the test, as well as they should do well whether they have a test or not. But this makes it a little easier for you to test them when the knowledge is present in their memory banks, correct?
Absolutely.
All right. Great. I don't think we have any opposition to this bill, so... All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate
you
coming.
Thank you very much for your time.
I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 169 and open a work session on Senate Bill 169. Senator Starr.
Madam Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 169 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 169 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? No discussion. Without objection, then, that bill is approved and moved to the Senate floor. Close the work session. And who would like to carry that bill? Who hasn't carried a bill for a while? Senator Morissette.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, that was easy. Okay, now, we're going to hear all about physical education and obesity and all kinds of good things. So, we have Senator Courtney we're waiting on. Do you want to stand at ease, or say we're going to stand at ease for a moment? Workforce Committee back into order. We now have the esteemed Senate President here joining us. Senator Courtney, could you come forward, please, with some disgusting piece of rubber in your hand? Yeah, you may have anyone join you that you wish. All the requirement is they have to identify themselves. Ariel and Debbie. And did I open? Oh, yes, we already opened the public hearing. Thank you. Did we do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. President, we're happy that you joined us today.
Thank you, Chair Walker, Vice Chair Starr, and Senator Morissette, and members of the Senate Education and Workforce Committee. I'm Peter Courtney. I'm a state senator, District 11, which includes portions of Salem and all of Jervis and Woodburn. I live at 2925 Island View Drive, north here in Salem at 97303. And I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 228. Child, and I believe you should have in front of me the testimony I am presenting, but I will not read it in detail for you out of respect for the two witnesses that are here as well as the others in the audience and your time. I will pick different portions of it to highlight if I may be allowed to do so. Child abuse, obesity has become an epidemic. The percentage of children ages 6 to 11 who are obese has more than doubled. The percentage of obese adolescents has tripled. In Oregon, 23% of 8th graders and 22% of 11th graders are overweight. Studies show Oregonians are among the most obese in the western United States. Prevalence of diabetes, which is directly related to obesity, has increased 62% from 1994 to 2001. For the first time in our history, our children are not expected to live as long as their parents. In the year 2000, Oregon had 48,000 weight-related hospitalizations at a cost of nearly $730 million. Lack of physical activity is a leading cause of obesity. By eighth grade, fewer than 50% of Oregon students have daily physical education classes in their schools. Senate Bill 228 would require at least 150 minutes of PE per week for students in the kindergarten through fifth grade and 225 minutes weekly for students in middle school. At least half of those minutes would have to be spent in actual physical activity. Senate Bill 228 would ensure a basic level of physical activity for students who spend a large part of their day in school. Physical activity offers vital physical and mental benefits for children. It builds lean muscle, builds muscle strength, and it builds greater bone mass, which helps prevent osteoporosis in adulthood. It helps reduce the risk of diabetes, helps control weight, and reduces fat. Physical activity programs have been linked to increased mental concentration and improved math, reading, and writing test scores. Students who take daily PE miss fewer classes, have a more positive attitude towards school, and earn better grades. Overweight students are absent from school six times more than non-overweight students. Today is a day to recognize that we must make physical education a priority. We cannot continue to fool ourselves into believing that kids' physical education is more expendable than reading, writing, or math. Healthy body, healthy mind. Healthy mind, healthy body. We have a number of advocates and experts who will tell you more about what is going on in Oregon schools and why this bill is so important. Now I want to introduce two students sitting next to me who will begin the presentation. Ariel Sarud is a senior at Forest Grove High School. He is the co-chair of the Washington County Commission on Children and Families Youth Advisory Council. He intends to continue his education in the field of political science. Debbie Miller is a senior at Hillsborough High School. She has been a board member of the Washington County Commission on Children and Families Youth Advisory Council for 4 years. Debbie will also pursue her academics interest in political science. Both Ariel and Debbie are school leaders in the area of promoting cultural diversity and drug and alcohol prevention education. Again, thank you for hearing this important bill. Now, if I could, Chair Walker, I would like to, if Debbie Miller could also now make her presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Miller.
Thank you, Chair Walker, Vice Chair Starr, and members of the committee for allowing me this opportunity to testify before you today. For the record, my name is Debbie Miller, and I'm a member of the Washington County Youth Advisory Council in association with the Washington County Commission on Children and Families. I'm here in support of Senator Courtney and his efforts to improve the lives of youth here in Oregon by improving Oregon's physical education program. The primary reason that I'm here before you today is to testify because I understand the vital role that physical education plays in the development of youth today. As a senior at Hillsborough High School, I have recently experienced Oregon's physical education program firsthand. In addition, I see the effect that this program has had on my peers. Almost all of my close friends are involved in one or more sports, from cross country to wrestling, from cheerleading to dance. These individuals take their health and well-being very seriously. They know that to perform at their best, they must work hard to condition their minds and bodies through exercise and healthy eating habits. This awareness of physical well-being, as well as the initiative they take in their daily lives, is a direct result of the Oregon Physical Education Program. Many of my peers developed an interest in their chosen sport at a very early age, during physical education classes in elementary school. In elementary school, they were able to learn a plethora of different sports, each finding one or more in which they were skilled. These early encounters with sports led my peers to pursue them throughout their lives and develop a regular regimen of exercise and healthy habits. However, it is not by reading about it in a book that my peers develop the deep love they have of their respective sports. They develop their skills and knowledge through physical motions of the game, practicing, and competing. By requiring a certain percent of time during a physical education program to be actual physical activity, ensures that future Oregon students will have the opportunity to develop a love for a sport that will eventually lead to a healthier lifestyle in the future. I watch my peers wake up early to go on a morning run and leave school to go to 4 hours of dance practice a night. They eat healthier, are in top physical shape because they want to be. No one is forcing them to work as hard as they do. It is entirely their own prerogative. They are taking an active role in their health and well-being today because they were taught early and often that a healthy lifestyle is very important. Senate Bill 228 will enhance the Oregon Physical Education Program so that future Oregon students will be able to have the same experiences that have motivated my peers to become healthy, active, health-conscious individuals. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to testify before you today. Again, I urge you to support Senate Bill 228 in order to provide future Oregon students with the means to a healthy and happy lifestyle.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. And I want to thank you for your community service work by being a member of the Advisory Council and the Commission on Children and Families. I know that you carry a heavy load when you're in high school, and so your service is truly appreciated. Mr. Sarud.
Thank you, Chairman Walker, Chairman Starrs, and members of the committee for giving me the opportunity to testify in front of you today. I would also like to take this time and thank Senator Courtney for his amazing leadership on this issue. For the record, my name is Ariel Sarud, and I am a senior at Forest Grove High School, and I serve as co-chairman of the Washington County Commission on Children and Families Youth Advisory Council. I'm here today to urge you to support Senate Bill 228 and help improve the lives of youth across the state. As a senior in high school, I know firsthand the impact that ESIC can have on young adults and children of all ages. All I have to do is walk down the halls of my high school, or any school for that matter, and see how physical inactivity has hindered many. As a teacher assistant at a local summer school, I have witnessed firsthand the devastating impact that ESIC can have on children in the playground. Children are often ridiculed and mocked for simply being overweight, and that is a tragedy. But here today, we have an opportunity to make a real difference in the lives of those children and young adults by requiring quality physical education for all. And I think we, as leaders of our communities, are obligated to take advantage of that. When I think of obesity in children, many examples come to mind. 2 weeks ago, for instance, I met a fourth grade boy who was participating in a boys' leadership retreat I facilitated at one of Washington County's local elementary schools. This boy was like every other boy, but was like every other fourth grader at the retreat. He was lively, talkative, and had a big personality. But one thing set him apart from all the other children there, and that was his obesity. I would watch him try and participate in our exercises, and I saw the struggles he undertook. Via battle of the amazing effort he put forth, this is his incapacity to do so. His weight hindered him from basic exercises like the one we call back-to-back, which is merely an activity where the students try to stand up using a partner for balance, or the one we call walking the bridge, where students need to balance themselves and walk across a wood beam. As I watched him try his best, I couldn't help but think that just maybe something as simple as a physical education class could have saved him from all that personal and social misery. And it's for boys like that and all the other children who are suffering from obesity and weight-related issues that I believe we need to pass Senate Bill 228. Although I personally have not had to struggle with obesity, I think I am a great example of how setting a healthy fitness habit at a young age can benefit in the long run. Since 7th grade, I've been a member of a Mexican folk dancing group, which has kept me physically active all through my high school years. I have continued to be part of this group, although I did not have to, in part due to the physical challenge it presents and because it keeps me fit. In addition, I have had quality physical education in my school, both in my 9th grade PE class and in my weight training class, which I took last year. In fact, I enjoy this class so much that this year, although I was not placed in it, I go back and every other morning and work out, although I don't have to. I know that it's because of that weight training class and my dance group that I am as fit as you see me today, and that I will continue to keep physically active all through my high school life. Physical education should be a large part of a student's life, yet more and more we see it being taken out of school curriculums. The Adolescent Risky Behavior section of the Oregon Public Health Association even includes as parts of the recommendations PE reform because of the rising obesity problem. I believe quality physical education can benefit all of us, no matter what age we are, and if we set a healthy lifestyle at a young age, it will benefit all of us in the long run, not just health-wise, but economically and socially. And it's because of that that I once again urge you for the passage of Senate Bill 228. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in front of you today, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Chair Walker?
Yes.
Thank you.
Again, thank you, Debbie, and thank you, Ariel. I did not show two things I want to show now. You have seen these, but I'm not sure the committee has. Recently, our staff went away, I guess, they did a workout in the building, and their fitness instructor, Francelle Wyatt, she's a registered nurse, and she is a wellness nurse counselor. She brought in this, which is 5 pounds of fat as it exists in the body. Now, I don't know whether it's masked or not, because I'm definitely over 5 pounds heavier than I should be. So I got this kind of looking thing going on in my body. This is 5 pounds of fat now in the body. And you heard me talk about children. Too many of our children have this kind of thing going on in their body. But more revealing than this thing, which is rather grotesque, is that here is something that is plaque buildup on the artery walls. Now, this here, number one, 30 to 40 years ago, number one, artery of a newborn through 20 years of age, number one, 30 to 40 years ago. Today, this is an artery of a newborn child. Number two, 30 to 40 years ago, this is an artery of a 30 to 40-year-old's. Right here, you see some of the plaque building up. Today, it's the artery of some elementary and junior high kids. This here, number three. 30, 40 years ago, artery of a 50 to 60-year-olds. Today, it's the artery of some high schoolers and 20, 40 years old, right here. And of course, the last 30, 40 years ago was an artery of 70 to 80-year-old. Today, it's an artery of 50 to 60 years old. Now, we all know what happens when plaque gets into our arteries. 30 to 40 years ago, today. 30 to 40 years ago, today. Now, as I say, this is very serious. And while I know it involves parents as well as others, and not just the schools, the magnitude of this is horrific. I want to emphasize once again, Chair Walker and members of this committee, for the first time in our history, our children are not expected to live as long as their parents. Thank you, Chair Walker, for allowing me to come here to testify today. And again, I want to thank Debbie and Ara for willing to come down from Hillsborough High School and Forest Grove High School to make their presentations.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Cruz?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. President Courtney, being a senior member of the legislature, maybe you know the answer to this. I know when I was in school, physical education was required up into high school. When did that requirement go away?
Chair Walker, Santa Cruz, I don't know.
I mean, all through middle school, I think up through 10th grade. Of course, this is back before electricity, but still. Still, it was a requirement, and we rode horses to school and all that good stuff. But
you walked 5 miles in the
school. Five miles uphill to and from school. But well, I mean, you know, it's President Courtney's example there. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely true, and if I may say, it goes beyond that. If you have a good physical regimen in your life, your arteries will also be bigger, so the plaque buildup doesn't have as much consequence. So, and they've done that with studies of Scandinavian people who have a high cholesterol diet, but they are high in physical activity, and so they do get plaque buildup in the arteries, but they're so much bigger, it doesn't make any difference. So,
thank you. Senator Morissette.
Thank you. President Courtney, that's half of the problem that we're facing with our youth today. The other half, you know what the other half is?
Chair Walker, Senator Morissette, I'm well aware of the other half. At least I'm well aware of the point you're trying to make.
Diet. We'll deal with that later, but that is a problem, diet, proper eating habits. Thank you. Thank you for being aware of that.
Let me ask the students a question. The bill does not make any provision for anyone to get credit, so to speak, for being in extracurricular activities. And I think, Ms. Miller, you talked about a plethora of activities. You know, that's my favorite word, by the way. In the whole English language, is plethora. It's got such a beautiful ring to it. But there doesn't seem to be any provision for that. So if someone's involved in extracurricular sports, it doesn't matter. According to this bill, they have to get 150 minutes a week of physical exercise in the education environment during the school day. Can you comment about what you think about that?
Well, I think that the primary issue with regards to the amount of physical activity required through a PE class, so many of my friends and fellow students at Hillsborough High School participate in after-school sports or participate in other physical activities. It's not necessarily the same as being in a class, really learning about the effects and the impacts that exercise can have on your body and all the positive things that you can gain from it. The more you exercise, the more energy you're going to have. And, you know, I watch students in some of my classes fall asleep because they just don't have energy because they're not eating healthy and they're not exercising enough. And so I think by requiring a certain amount of actual physical education where it's not just a matter of...
I was here for that the rest of my life.
Mr. President,
I tell you, it's not mine, but it wouldn't work.
We have an appointment at 5 o'clock.
I know. I think it's going to happen before 5.
Previously arranged. So please, I will add that to our list.
Somebody slipped that in his pocket and called
it. Yes, they did. All right. Thank you.
Some people have the skill to be able to like play it off. Just look around and he jumped about 5 feet.
I've sinned.
Especially since I warn you. But anyway, Ms. Miller, continue, please.
Back on track.
I'm just destined to be interrupted by cell phones. Yeah. I think I mentioned that once before, and I'm going to mention it again. It really interrupts the flow of what our folks are testifying about. So please, please, please turn your cell phones off. Thank you.
Well, as I was saying, the actual being in a physical education class, and it's kind of a harsh word, but being forced to exercise and being forced to really take into consideration how much you don't do in a day, like how many times you could take, you know, going up the stairs instead of going in an elevator or on an escalator, I think it really forces kids to take those kind of things into account when they're being instructed by a teacher as a position of respect that students have for their teachers. The fact that we see physical education teachers in shape and telling us what they do in their everyday lives to make sure that they maintain good physical health, I think that it's much more important than merely counting time that you spend after school. Plus, the more time that you spend in school exercising, the more likely you're to find something that you're interested in that you'd want to pursue after school.
Thank you. Mr. Screw, did you want to comment to that?
I will add to that that you mentioned about receiving credit, you know, if you're in a sports or if you're, you know, you will get credit for that. I think anybody who was in a sport would tell you that they would love to get credit for being, you know, for participating in a sport.
Especially when daily doubles, right?
Right, exactly. But, you know, the chances of that happening, probably not. But I will tell you this. The whole point of the bill is to set or have kids set a healthy lifestyle at a young age. I know personally many individuals who played basketball in their PE class, you know, third grade, and now are, you know, stars of the basketball team in high school. Because they participated in the basketball game, you know, in fourth grade, and now they know that that's something they're good at. They kept going with it, and you know, the physical activity keeps going. And I think that's the point of what the bill is trying to get. So,
well, thank you. That's the question. The answer I was looking for from both of you, because I think it is very important. And those of us who are a little bit older on this committee, I'll exclude the member to my immediate left, remember the days of where we had PE was required in our school. In fact, in my school, we had to wear blue shorts, white shirt, white socks, and white shoes that we went down to JCPenney and bought, and we all had to look the same. And that wasn't too awfully long ago. I mean, in 1968, I was in the sixth grade, and I won the President's Physical Fitness Award.
Right.
Lyndon Baines Johnson signed my certificate personally. And, you know, I still have that award, and I'm, I won't tell you how old I am, but I'm old enough to have thrown it away. But, you know, it meant a lot to me back then, and it still does. So I really appreciate the comments that you had to say today. And the president has certainly shown us that disgusting blob that we all pack around to some degree in our bodies. And so we really appreciate that.
Except Senator Knefford.
The fellow senator to my immediate left. But thank you very much for your testimony. Anyone else have any questions?
Senator Walker.
Yes.
Senator Cruz, I'm sorry I couldn't answer your question, but I did note that there are a number of advocates and experts who will tell you more about what's going on in Oregon schools, and perhaps they can tell you when this all stopped. And I have to tell you, while you've been noting certain individuals, I don't think Senator Charles Starr has been out of shape for a single moment of his existence. He may be probably one of the greatest examples of how you stay in shape that I've seen. Now, Senator Morissette is a former marathon runner, so he himself is a rather accomplished type of person. Senator Morissette, I was talking about you.
Thank you, Mr.
Probably
President.
Of all the committees that I go before, this could be the best conditioned and the best shaped committee of any. But in some ways, therefore, I hope that this testimony has some merit, and I do think this is a well-thought-out piece of legislation. I do regret that there is going to be some significant opposition. I did not put it in the bill as to who would be opposed to it, but there will be opposition, basically along the lines of cost. I'm just going to be upfront with you, and so I don't like to not prepare you for that. I'm sure you figured that out because of funding for schools. That I think will probably be more the reason there's opposition than anything else, although there may be some other views that physical education should be designed differently and things like that. But so there is opposition, and if you didn't know it, I would feel remiss if I didn't tell you about that.
Well, no, Mr. President, we're aware of the concerns, and you did point out in your written testimony that a conversation needs to occur, and it could occur in ways and means, and I agree with you. I think the committee agrees with you, and it's our intent, hopefully, to pass this bill down to Ways and Means. And you know, I sit on that committee. You wisely put policy chairs on Ways and Means committees today, and this is a bill that's a good example of why you did that, and I appreciate that. So we'll hear everyone out today on the policy issue, and then we'll talk about the money issue down in Ways and Means. And I've been thinking about the penalty for your cell phone going off. and whoever else was out there and they don't want to tell me, I'd like you to make $5 worth of food contribution to the food bank barrel outside of your office on the second floor. And next time it goes off, it will go up. So anyone out there whose cell phone went off, please make a food contribution worth at least $5 to the barrels that you find throughout the building. Does that sound fair?
Yes, thank you. I'm sorry. I did violate the rules of the committee, and I do feel very badly about that.
All right. Thank you. And Senator Morsette, you had a comment?
Yes. The reason I was able to run a marathon is because I scrupulously avoided junk food. That's the reason. And I think there were three cell phones that went off. There was somebody else back there with that very melodic ring to it. So.
Okay, great. Well, thank you both. Thank you, both of you, for your advocacy. Okay, next we have some invited testimony, and then we'll be getting down to folks who've signed up. Brian Doherty and Sean Sullivan, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Walker and members of the committee. I owe $10, but I would like to make an explanation. My phone was on vibrate. It was the voicemail that went off, and then it was when I turned off the phone, it actually made another noise to remind me.
Well,
we're giving $10 to the Oregon Food Bank.
Thank you, Mr. Doherty. The Governor's Food Drive appreciates that contribution.
I've taken the heat off of everybody else, I think, this afternoon. I'm here to testify in support. My name is Brian Doherty. I'm with the Miller Nash Law Firm. Also, I'm a member of the board of the Oregon Sports Authority, and I'm here testifying in that capacity. I appreciate following Senator Courtney, who I think is one of the number one athletic supporters in Oregon. Maybe I should rephrase that. Supporter of athletics in Oregon. Not here.
Oh, it took me a moment. I got it.
Apparently, wasn't here.
That's very good. I think I'll have to transcribe that one.
The Oregon Sports Authority gets very involved with all sorts of athletic events and venues in Oregon, and also through its Oregon Sports Authority Foundation sponsors athletics and assists schools throughout the state with their athletic programs. One of the things that they realized was that the correlation of activity, physical activity, and your mental activity, and particularly in school settings, is key. And they've been striving to increase this effort for years. One of the things they did is they wanted to better understand the status of physical education and after-school activities and the role with Oregon schools. I have to my left Sean Sullivan of SCN Inc., who we commissioned to do such a study, and I think he'll have some interesting statistics to share with you. But I certainly echo Senator Courtney and the other people that testified here. There is clear science that's tying the issue with obesity and the fact that you can do something with physical activity to improve kids' grades and everything else. I got most of my physical activity through detention after school, but it worked nonetheless. I hope that you will give Sean some time to speak with you about this, and we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Introduce yourself, please.
Thank you, Chair Walker, members of the committee. My name is Sean Sullivan. I'm from SCN Inc., and I'm here today to present the report that you have in front of you, and I'd like to take a few minutes just to summarize the results and then take any questions you might have about it. After the proponents of this legislation couldn't determine how often or the amount of time that schools in Oregon were teaching physical education, they asked me to conduct a survey in order to do our best to determine what that figure is. We distributed surveys to all Oregon school districts, 199 surveys, and received back, at this point, 60. So this survey represents data from about one-third of Oregon school districts. There were three questions that we tried to answer with this survey. One was, how much instruction time is being devoted to physical education? Number two is, are there any correlations between the size of the district and the amount of physical education that's being taught? And number three is, are there any correlations between a disadvantaged school district and the amount of physical education that's taught? And for the purposes of this survey, we define a disadvantaged school district as a district that has a free and reduced price lunch ratio above 60%. The statewide average is 41%, so that's a fairly high average in the state. Turning to page number four, you can see a graph that shows the statewide average for elementary and middle schools. Elementary schools, we found, teach an average of 97 minutes per week of physical education, and middle schools teach an average of 175 minutes per week. But I think the interesting thing here is the range of times that we found. For elementary schools, the range varied from 0 to 360 minutes per week. For middle schools, it ranged from 47 to 330 minutes per week. So, if you will, Chair Walker, there's a plethora of physical education times to be found in the state. Turning to page number five, there's a chart that summarizes the data by school district size. And for that, we used the Department of Education's size classifications for small, medium, and large school districts. And we found that based on the 60 districts that we surveyed or that self-reported for this survey, there doesn't seem to be any correlation between district size and physical education instruction time. It may look at the graph, it may look like large districts teach a bit more, but in fact, half the school districts, large school districts that responded, said that at the elementary level, they leave physical education to the option of the classroom teacher. So that data is not reflected in the graph since it can't be quantified. And I'd like to skip ahead to page 11. I think there's an interesting graph that shows exactly how physical education times are distributed according to the school districts that responded. And you can see that there really isn't a fixed pattern based on school district size. It doesn't seem to be correlated. The other interesting thing that I'd like to point out is that elementary schools, about 12 of them, are at or above the limits called for in this bill. And for middle schools, we found that about 18 out of the 60 that responded meet or exceed the limits that are in this bill. Now, I think the most interesting and, I think, disturbing conclusion that we found based on these respondent school districts is that for disadvantaged school districts, it appears that they're teaching the least amount of physical education. And if you look at page 6, we summarize those findings. For elementary schools, the most disadvantaged, so those that have an FRPL ratio above 60%, teach 60 minutes per week of physical education on the median, which is 27 minutes less than districts as a whole. For middle schools, we found that those disadvantaged districts teach 137 minutes per week, whereas middle school districts as a whole teach 180 minutes as a median. So as you can see, based on this sample, it appears that disadvantaged students are the ones that are getting the least amount of physical education.
Mr. Sullivan, can I ask you, do you have a hypothesis as to why that is?
You know, I don't. I think there are other people that could better speak to that. Perhaps the districts are stretched in other ways and feel that they can't teach as much phys ed as other districts, but there are so many factors that go into this, I think it's hard to conclude just based on this data what the reason for that is.
Okay.
And just to conclude, I included at the back of this report an appendix that summarizes the physical education standards in all other states, and we found that 29 states have a minimum time standard currently. And recently, we've also found that 4 states have standards that meet or exceed the standards called for in this bill, and all of those, I think, were recently enacted. And that's California, Illinois, Louisiana, and Texas. And I'd be happy to take any questions you have about this.
Does the committee have some questions? So these states, let me make sure I understand, these states you surveyed all their physical
13.
Education programs.
We looked at...
Where's Oregon ranked?
We didn't really rank them. Currently, Oregon doesn't have a time standard, so they aren't part of that 29-state sample that do have time standards.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Deckert.
Just a couple of questions. One is just on the methodology. So it says One third responded. Does that concern you at all that we just didn't get accurate reflection of what's going on with schools, that only a third responded to the survey?
With data that is this varied, it's hard to say how it would change if you had a larger sample. But there were a couple measures that make me think that this is a fairly accurate measure. One is that if you average the FRPL ratios for the sample, it pretty much meets the statewide average for school districts. And the other thing is that the size of school districts that we received responses from closely matches the statewide size characteristics for school districts. Now, that said, it certainly could change if we had more data to report. But I think the variation and the number of school districts that aren't teaching very much physical education would obviously not change. But the averages may shift somewhat.
And, Madam Chair, I'm just looking through the conclusion part. So the other question is, and maybe it's just not commissioned in the survey, is it doesn't, other than letting us know just kind of the state of, or perhaps the state of PE education, it doesn't give us, and maybe this bill is the guidance that y'all are asking for, but the guidance that we surveyed the state, here's what other states are doing, we recommend Oregon, and perhaps it's just we recommend Oregon institute this bill and find the funding to do it. But that's what you're always looking for in conclusions, is kind of, well, this is what we think you should do after we dug around for a while.
Chair Walker, Senator Deckard, I think this will answer your question. I think we were surprised to find as many school districts as we did that meet or exceed the standard that is in this bill. And I think one of the conclusions you can make from that is that it seems feasible that they could meet that standard, and therefore, other school districts should be able to meet that as well, perhaps.
Hmm. Okay, that's fine.
The schools that were meeting or exceeding that standard, are they located in rural parts of the state, urban parts of the state, or was there any kind of correlation there?
Chair Walker, we didn't cover that in this report, but I'd be happy to look over our data and try to correlate the districts with rural and urban and provide those results.
Yeah, I think that would be a little bit fascinating, and we'll probably want to know that in ways and means also.
Mm-hmm. We'll get that for you.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate
you
coming. Thank you for the report.
Thank you.
I'm going to take two folks, one who listed they are from more than 100 miles away. So Elise Brown and Laura Thielander, if you could come up next. Elise is not, but Laura is, and so Elise gets to tag along because they're together.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Elise Brown, representing American Diabetes Association. And it's my pleasure to introduce a new member of our team who resides in the state of Washington. Laura Thielander is the new advocacy coordinator for the Western States for American Diabetes. And I'll let her close.
All right. Thank you, Honorable Senator Walker and committee. I'm here as a representative of the American Diabetes Association because I don't know if you're aware, but in the year 2000, one in three children born will develop type 2 diabetes. One in three children born in the year 2000 will develop type 2 diabetes. That is a direct result from sedentary lifestyle and unhealthy eating habits. That's it. They're not born that way. They're not born with a pancreas that doesn't create insulin like children with type 1 diabetes are. It's lifestyle. 16 million Americans are undiagnosed with type 2 diabetes. 18 million Americans have diabetes. And another 41 million Americans have prediabetes. So I urge you to take this very seriously today and do something about the incidence of type 2 diabetes that is affecting our children.
Ms. Selander, could, for the benefit of those who are watching, people actually watch us at home, and those in the audience, and even maybe some of our committee members, could you explain the difference between type 1 and type 2 for us, please?
Absolutely. Type 1 diabetes is where your body attacks your cells that produce insulin in your pancreas, which are called islet cells. So basically what happens is your body can no longer produce insulin because those cells were attacked. In type 2 diabetes, what happens is your body can still produce insulin and does, but due to lifestyle and being overweight and eating habits, your body can't keep up with your needs of insulin. As well as when your insulin levels are high and it can't keep up, then your body becomes insensitive to the insulin that you have. So there's sort of two things going on. It can't make enough, and then it can't register. It's kind of like when you put a frog in hot water. If it's instantly hot, it's going to jump out. But if you keep raising the temperature, it'll eventually croak. So it's that same kind of thing. Your body gets used to having that level of insulin in its body, and then it can't keep up and can't register what it needs. So that's the difference.
And let me ask you then, is type 2 diabetes, type 1 is not reversible. Is type 2 reversible?
Absolutely. There's some great studies that are out, and if you'd like, we can provide that later to you. But that says even if you lose 10 pounds, you can reduce your risk for diabetes. Some people who have been on oral medications for diabetes, and if they become physically active and lose 10 pounds, they are no longer considered having diabetes, that their body can then self-regulate itself and they don't have to take medication. Now, they do need to stay physically active and eat a healthy diet, but they are able to control and live a healthy lifestyle without being on oral meds and testing their blood sugar.
I think my third question will be, do you have an estimate of what the medical cost to society is for type 2 diabetes medical conditions that people are diagnosed with? Because why don't you run through the things that happen to you with type 2 and then about how much it costs.
Absolutely. If you don't take care of your diabetes with type 2 diabetes, kidney failure, it's amputations, it's blindness. Those are the three big things. And then it's heart disease. It's heart attacks and things like that. And what's really sad is those are the costs that come down to the state periodically. Those are the most expensive things in the healthcare system are the amputations and the blindness and the heart disease. And it costs the United States $132 billion a year on diabetes-related complications alone.
And so your final softball question is, if we can prevent the type 2 diabetes by encouraging students to be physically active, physically fit, and giving them a good diet, we can reduce long-term health costs and save lives, correct?
Absolutely, without a doubt. Absolutely. You're right on.
Person. do you happen to know Claire Rosenfeld by chance?
I do know. She was a National Youth Advocate for the American Diabetes Association several years ago. She is a great young lady.
Yes, she's very awesome, and I met her when she was quite young and have followed her career and very pleased with the work that she's done on behalf of your organization as well as for other children across the country who have diabetes.
Absolutely. She's definitely a role model.
Yeah, thank you. Any other questions from the committee? All right, thank you for coming all the way down from Washington.
Yes.
Elise.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Next, we're going to try to get some of the doctors in the group because they charge a lot for their time, and I bet they need to get back to their practice. So we will, let's see, we have Dr. John Evans and Dr. Minot Cleveland. Minot?
Dr. Wilkins.
And Dr. We can do three at a time. Dr. Wilkins? Where? Oh, right there. On my list.
It's on the beard of the school board I know I'm from.
Okay. So Dr. Wilkins, Dr. Evans, and Dr. Cleveland. So why don't we start over here since you're already seated, sir?
I'm Dr. John Wilkins. I'm a 1975 graduate of Beaverton High School and a 1983 graduate of Oregon Health Sciences University. I live at 6712 Southwest Moonshadow Court in Portland, Oregon, 97223. I'm a past member of the Beaverton School Board, serving there from May 1995 through June of 2001. I'm also a past member of the Northwest Regional ESD Budget Committee from 1997 through 1993. I mean, correction, through 2003.
Did you say ESD Budget Committee?
Yeah, Northwest Regional ESD.
We'll go out and talk to them.
I don't know if you're aware, Dr. Wilkins, but we have a giant ESD bill this session that Senator Cruz is in charge of the work group about. So he may corner you.
I'm happy to talk about that at some other time. I came primarily, though, as a parent. I have four children. My older two graduated from Beaverton High School and now attend Stanford University. I have a sixth grader and eighth grader at Whitford Middle School in the Beaverton School District. And I would echo 10,000 times what's already been said. This is a bill that we can't afford to not have in this district. It is not in this state. We have an epidemic of health problems that are related to primarily the sedentary lifestyle as well as poor dietary habits. We can do something directly in the schools about sedentary lifestyle. It is something that makes sense, not just from an economic standpoint, however. It also makes sense from an educational standpoint. The ancient Greeks knew it. They had the concept of a healthy body, healthy mind, healthy spirit. The foundation of our university system in this country also had athletics as a key component of the educational program, not because it was a fundraiser, but because it was made sense to have a healthy body for the students in those universities to achieve well from an academic standpoint. We have seen the same thing with recent studies out of California. California Department of Education did a study in 2001. University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, just did a study this last fall that was released, and it's going to be presented in the final results this spring, that showed that students who are physically fit achieve much greater rates, particularly in mathematics, but also in reading. The scores are impressive in those data. This is something that we can't afford to not do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair Walker and the rest of the committee, I'm John Evans. I live at 59 Aquinas, Lake Oswego. I work at St. Vincent's Hospital, and I'm the chair of the Oregon Medical Association's Community Health Committee. And I'm here as a representative of the Oregon Medical Association, and I speak in favor of Senate Bill 228. If any of the arguments that, and I'll try not to be redundant to some of the other things that have been said, they're all very good and important, but looking back over the last 40 to 50 years that we have reasonably good data, our rate of obesity has climbed from 10 to 30%. Overall, our population of overweight and obese adults is easily 60%. You know, 6 out of 10, 3 out of 5 people, all of us. The issue with that is that our children reflect and image us, they mirror us, they are becoming more obese, with easily 15 to 20% of them overweight or obese. Just in the survey, the Oregon Teen Survey here in Oregon, where we have good data, that's 72,000 people in just those two grades, the 8th and 11th grades, that they reviewed the data, that are at risk for overweight, and 38,000 children here that are seriously overweight. It's important because of the facts that you've heard from Dr. Courtney and others, that if you're obese at age 6, 50% of those people will become obese adults. Age 13, 70-80% will become obese adults. And if there's one parent that's obese, they even a greater percentage. African American and Mexican American children have are 50% more likely to be obese, as well as women, particularly women in the ethnic groups. The health consequences are what are key to this epidemic. They're lifelong. The damage occurs early. The diabetes that you just heard about, with one in three people becoming or developing it over their lifespan. Well, once you've had 15 to 20 years of that diabetes, whether even if it's not perfectly controlled, you will develop the end organ disease in the kidneys particularly, and that's where the renal damage or the kidney damage is becoming a potential catastrophe that's waiting for us in our budgets. We will not be able to pay for the kidney transplants with the immunosuppression throughout their life, or the dialysis and the 3 hours a day that people will have to devote, plus the pain and suffering that our children and adults will go through. Hypertension is another key factor that if we ignore the obesity epidemic in our children, we will pay the consequences. With 40% of obese patients having some level of hypertension, the Framingham study clearly showed that for every 10% increase in weight, you'll elevate your blood pressure 6.5 millimeters of mercury. The facts are clear. We can't ignore it. As well as increased risk of coronary artery disease. One of the issues with coronary artery disease that's real kind of sad is people don't believe that young people can develop it, but we have evidence all the way back from Korea and even more clearly established from Vietnam, where we've had 22-year-olds getting autopsied and showing significant coronary artery disease, even at that young age, of easily up to 5 to 10% of the people with severe coronary artery atherosclerosis. Other issues are lung disease, which is rampant. And one of the points that was mentioned earlier was about years of life lost. Well, there's been a pretty decent study on that in JAMA that showed for when there's a significant increase in weight with a BMI greater than 45. In white men, there's a 13 years YLL, years lost of life. African-American men with a BMI greater than 45, or, it's 20 years loss of life. They lose 20 years off their life. Our children, we know they're not doing PE. We know that PE is associated with maintenance of weight loss. There's very good evidence-based studies that show it keeps weight off and that it increases the aerobic capacity of our children. We need to pass this bill. We need to adjust our expectations of our schools to help support this. They're going to say this is an unfunded mandate. Yeah, it is an unfunded mandate, but it's to keep our children alive. It's to keep from expenses going throughout our statewide health system and our national health system for the years going on. We've ignored it ourselves. You know, we've allowed, even though we walk to school 2 miles a day or 5 miles, we still let ourselves get obese and heavy. And we're seeing it happen in our children. It's there, it's real, and we can't ignore that. So this, we have to modify what the schools expect. Either that's lengthen the day, shorten the periods, get less electives. We have to some way make it a mandate, not just an unfunded mandate. And thanks.
Thank you. Dr. Evans, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions because you talked about kidney transplants. And that's always an option when your kidneys fail and you go on dialysis. But let me ask you this. There's not enough spare kidneys to go around to all these people who are...
That's true. So you go on dialysis. You sit in a dialysis unit for 3 hours, three times a week, and you get poked and you get them revised and you get the pain and suffering of that. It's a life-altering experience. And once, like today, I've had an individual with a BMI of 53. They had their kidneys are close to being failing to that point, and just last month they actually had a heart attack, and the person was only 28. You know, it all adds up. It's a lot of pain and suffering and a huge amount of costs. Transplants, they're not available for everybody, but we can always dialyze people if we have the money to do it.
Thank you.
And it's all reversible. All that is physically reversible. All those findings that President Courtney showed are all physically reversible with return to health status, with weight loss, with increase in physical activity. Those are not permanent changes yet. They are when they get to be my age, but at their age, they're completely reversible.
Thank you. Dr. Cleveland.
Chair Walker, Vice Chair Starr, and other members of the committee. Thank you very much for this opportunity to testify. My name is Minette Cleveland. I'm an attending physician in the ambulatory care unit in the emergency department at Legacy Good Samaritan Hospital in Northwest Portland. I live in Milwaukee at 6072 Southeast Eastbrook Drive. Still have one daughter in the North Clackamas School District. I'm also state chair of the Oregon Coalition for Promoting Physical Activity, a hat that I'm wearing today. OCPPA is a proud co-author of the statewide physical activity plan, which is a strategic plan for increasing physical activity among all Oregonians. It's really great to be here today. As a longtime advocate for physical education, I want to express my deep appreciation to Senator Courtney for his leadership in championing this bill and other senators and representatives who are stepping forth to support it. A lot's changed in the last 10 or 15 years. There have been significant cuts in PE. I reviewed an Oregonian op-ed piece I wrote on PE back in 1992, and my childhood obesity rates were woefully outdated. They're much worse today. That's the bad news. But I bring some good news today. Awareness has changed. The obesity epidemic has served as a real sharp wake-up call for us. It's made the inactivity epidemic visible. Cuts in physical education are now widely recognized as a leading cause of the obesity epidemic. PE is no longer the Rodney Dangerfield of subjects in PE in schools. It's starting to get the respect it deserves. But here's the really good news. Never before has such a diverse coalition of groups and citizens come together to support PE. Back in 1995, a small, feisty band of PE advocates, some of whom are here today, first set foot in the Capitol to advocate for PE. But now look who's at the table. Not only the Heart Association leading the way, but other major nonprofit health organizations like the American Cancer, Diabetes, and Lung Associations. Not just the OCPPA, but the Oregon Sports Authority and the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. Not just one or two persistent physicians, but powerful, unprecedented support from the medical community. The OMA, which I'm a proud member of, Oregon Academy of Family Physicians, Oregon Nurses Association, and now the Oregon Pediatric Society. And at the top of our list of endorsers, you'll find the African American Health Coalition. And in the spirit of partnership, I've been asked to introduce a testimony that you should also receive, have received copies of, from Nike, our corporate partner in this effort. Alicia Percello, the Nike Go manager, was unable to testify today, but she has very powerful written testimony, which she provided at the interim education committee hearing in the summer. Nike Go is a national grassroots program that Nike's doing to promote physical activity among kids, and their PE to Go program is an innovative program for training teachers to better deliver PE. We appreciate Nike stepping up to do something about the obesity epidemic through its programs and through its policies. I will leave you with three reasons to support this bill: health, academic performance, and social justice. Well, the evidence is clear. PE works. It's one of the most effective interventions to promote physical activity. It increases activity levels in kids, it increases aerobic fitness, and it increases the likelihood that kids will be active adults. We cannot treat our way out of the obesity epidemic. It's time to move upstream and invest in the health of our kids. Physical education is the best preventive medicine health promotion. Number two, physical education improves academic performance. Again, the evidence is clear. Healthy, active kids learn better. Higher fitness levels are linked with higher academic performance. In a time of fiscal constraint, we have to make very wise choices about our resources to improve academic performance. Investing in quality PE is one such critical choice. The Greeks have been mentioned: train the body, mind, and spirit together. And finally, physical education is ever more an issue of social justice. Quality physical education. No other subject has received so many strong endorsements from so many national health-related organizations. Yet, we are not yet delivering what we need to all of our kids, as heard from the numbers in the SCN study. But even more disturbing is the fact that the SCN study found that the kids at the most disadvantaged schools, the kids that have over 60% free or reduced lunch, are not getting as much PE as the other kids. The study's conclusion: the state's most disadvantaged elementary school students appear to receive the least amount of physical education instruction. Yes, we need more data. We need more than a third response rate. We need to gather more data about what's going on in Oregon. But what we have now
paints a very disturbing picture. And this disparity in PE must not stand. And when we have health disparities that involve higher rates of obesity and diabetes among African Americans, Hispanic, and those of lower socioeconomic status, again, physical education becomes a social justice issue so that we make sure that every child, particularly those in underserved populations, have a chance to participate in quality PE. Oregonians value and enjoy physical activity in their daily lives and live in communities that support physical activity. Well, that's the vision of the Oregon Coalition Promoting Physical Activity, and passage of SB 228 will move us along that path of making that vision a reality. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, gentlemen. I have a question. As one of the large group of baby boomers who are getting into the medical care system, because that is huge. I don't think we are aware of just how huge of a problem it is. We're coming into Social Security, going ways off, and we're also putting a big stressor on the medical system because we are of a time where we demand good services in medical care. We want all the tests, and we want all of these things. Don't you see that as creating a conflict and crisis in being able to cover all of these people, because we have the young children coming up with all of these diseases and ailments, as you have explained, and then we have the baby boomers on the other end? So they're going to come together and sandwich the system to the point where we can't afford it anymore.
Chair Walker and members of the committee, we can't pay for the care we're trying to deliver now. You know, I'm on the front lines in the ambulatory care unit. It's basically the urgent care walk-in side of the emergency department at Good Sam. So we see everybody, regardless of their complaint or regardless of their ability to pay. Some have the Oregon Health Plan. Some just lost the Oregon Health Plan. Some have insurance. Some don't. We see everybody. But more and more, we end up writing prescriptions for people who have no insurance and have little means to pay for the prescriptions. The hospital, we provide great care, but the hospitals all around the city take losses for uncompensated care. So your point is well taken. We can't pay for the care we're delivering now, and it's going to get worse. It's unless we invest in prevention.
Chair Walker, I agree with you, your assessment, totally. That's exactly what's going to happen. And we need to make the public and ourselves, all of ourselves, including physicians, believe that this is happening. That is exactly what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's like Dr. Wilkins said, 20 years of this condition uncontrolled, and the damage is done, and you can't reverse it. We will have a catastrophe of renal damaged patients from the diabetes that has occurred, from the obesity. It will happen, and we will have to figure out a way to deal with it on a gradual basis. Last month, I accumulated a little bit of data from one day, and we had, in our one-day surgery, we had 74% of the people being overweight or obese. And that's our adults. That's not adding in the kids with their problems that will accumulate. Mm-hmm. So it's a disaster that's waiting to happen. It's forming.
Yeah, I see these two trains coming down the track and that big glob of icky stuff in the middle, and the trains are going to hit it, and you know, we're not going to know how to handle it. I don't know if you're aware, but I don't know if all my colleagues are wearing those, but we've all been outfitted with pedometers, and I put it on. Today I've walked 2,074 steps.
8,000 to go.
Darn. Well, you know, I'm in committee 6 hours a day, so I'm doing pretty good for sitting down 6 hours a day, but, you know, it's an effort to try to get us to get up and move around as well, because we sit here so much and do our work. But it's just the mindset, and
it's a value.
And a value, right. It's putting a premium on that time. And I can always find time to sit at the computer and get my work done, but I don't seem to value the exercise time. And now that my dog has passed away, I don't have a dog sitting there knocking over my garbage can saying, "Mom, it's time to go for a walk." I mean, he would knock over the garbage can, and if I didn't respond, he would. This is a little 10-pound dog, and he would pull all the papers out to get me to say, "Okay, you want to go for a walk?" And he's excited. So pets are very helpful at getting us motivated as well.
Senator Walker, we haven't even begun to discuss the other economic losses from psychiatric illnesses, depression, as well as lost days of work from illness and the economic impact that has, both from a local business cost as well as lost revenue for the state from lost tax revenue. The impact of this is phenomenal. We can't afford to not do this. We really can't. It's going to be hard enough to pay for the health care that's coming up if we allow a new generation to be as unhealthy as they apparently are headed to be. We will be bankrupt in short order.
And Dr. Cleveland mentioned it, is the studies that show that PE in schools is helpful are evidence-based studies. It's clear-cut. It's not questionable. It's not, well, you don't know that this is going to work. We do know it will work.
Senator Walker, if I might add, I want to applaud your use of a pedometer. I think they're very useful tools. Again, the good news is that despite all of our problems, if we get kids active early, good things can happen. And even with people with medical conditions, as you've heard about diabetes, whether and regardless of age, if we can get people moving who have not been active, that's where we get the most bang for our buck from a public health standpoint. It's not from taking us people who still held on or are still pretty, you know, moderately plus fit and getting us real fit, super master athletes. No, it's getting the people that are not active, not physically fit, moderately active, moderately fit. They will get almost all of the health benefits, and Oregon will reap all the benefits from that change in lifestyle.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Question, Senator Deckert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just, this is, and in your testimony is crystal clear in terms of the importance of this, and I think you probably will get, you certainly will have my support, but the one thing that at least is in the back of my mind as I listen to this is the other choices that we're not making. And in some ways, because we do it with foreign language and we do it with arts and we do it with now physical education, and to me, I guess the concern that I would express is, in some ways, do we send the wrong message to Oregonians? Given the state, and you've mentioned fiscal constraints, we invest about the same amount on public education, K-12, as when I was a student at Beaverton High School in 1989, not inflation adjusted. And in some ways, at least in the back of my mind, I think, are we sending Oregonians the wrong message that we can mandate PE, we can mandate other programs, and do it within the constraints of budget investment from the state level and the transfer to the state level that simply is unsustainable. And so I think in some ways we're falling down the same course that Oregonians perhaps have of painting a system that we want without actually putting the requisite funds, which is the heavy lifting, to actually buy the system that we want. And I don't know, especially Dr. Wilkins, you both have the medical, but you've also served on a school board, and what you're going to have to make.
Certainly it was with reticence that I thought about coming here because of knowing that as a school board, local school board member, unfunded mandates are one of the least favorite things that we had to deal with. That said, though, I don't think there's a choice with this. The data is very clear, both from a fiscal standpoint, but also from an educational standpoint. Students do better who are physically fit. And so from that standpoint, I couldn't sit on the sidelines and say, I don't want to see another unfunded mandate, because of all the things we can do to improve student performance, this is very clear that it works, and it works very well. There are a lot of other things that we try, new math reform and things like that are very fuzzy in their outcome. There is no fuzziness to the data here. The data is very clear that educationally it's sound. It makes sense not just for physical education, but it also improves student performance and students' sense of well-being and decreases the number of days out of class. Student performance increases dramatically with this, very significantly, more than just about anything else. And that's why I'm here to support Senate Bill 228.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate you taking time out of your busy day. And we have a couple more doctors who wanted to testify, Dr. Weil and Dr. Lace.
Today.
Okay.
Well, so that's just like one class. five are middle school classes.
Okay. You want to go first?
Sure. Chair Walker, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 228. For the record, my name is Dr. Bo Wheel, and I represent the Oregon Pediatric Society and Dornbecker Children's Hospital at OHSU. As you know, the obesity epidemic has become an alarming problem both nationally and locally. The prevalence of obesity amongst American adults is 30%. Oregon has become the most obese state of any state west of the Rockies. The rise in obesity in children is mimicking that of adults. We are seeing more and more obese children walk through our clinic doors. This is specifically frustrating for us because treatment of childhood obesity has not yet been figured out. We're still struggling to understand how to treat this best. And because of that, it's becoming more and more clear that the importance lies in prevention. The most recent AAP, which is the American Academy of Pediatrics policy statement on childhood obesity, states that 15% of America's youth is obese. Children from low socioeconomic homes have almost twice this number in prevalence. This is another important fact in the fact that it's very difficult to reach this population at times, and there's no better vehicle than using the public school system in order to do so. As you may understand, the rise in obesity in children is now paralleling a drop in activity. We're seeing children leading more and more sedentary lifestyles. They're watching more television. They're playing more video games. They're engaging in less physical activity. A recent study shows that watching television burns fewer calories than reading a book. It burns fewer calories than sleeping. Over one-fourth of our children are watching more than 4 hours of television a day.
Wait a minute. Back up.
Yeah. That's a surprising one, isn't it?
Watching television burns fewer calories than reading a book?
Reading a book, and also fewer than sleeping.
Wow.
I think the idea is that somehow it puts you into somewhat of a catatonic state.
Trouble sleeping.
In addition to that, I would also add that while in front of the television, you're eating potato chips, brownies, and drinking sodas, as opposed to while you're out on the physical fitness field engaging in activities.
Madam Chair?
Yes?
So what happens if you fall asleep while watching TV? I'm sorry, I can't resist that.
It was stated before, the warning issued by the Centers for Disease Control, that unless we change our policies on physical activity and nutrition, we can expect that 1 in 3 children born in the year 2000 will develop diabetes. I think that's an amazing statistic. If we stop and think about this, we can project that very soon we will see 1/3 of our country affected by this devastating illness. Obesity has also been directly associated with things such as cardiovascular disease, high blood pressure, strokes, cancer, and many others. As has been said before, there are also psychological issues associated with obesity. These things include poor self-esteem, suicide, and depression. The Surgeon General recently referred to obese children as little ticking time bombs with catastrophic consequences. And because of these associations, he recommended physical education programs in our schools. Costs associated with obesity are staggering. The annual obesity-related costs amongst children have risen over 350% in the last 20 years. We talked a lot about diabetes this far, and I think it's important to not only realize that as we have more obese people, we will have more diabetes, and thus we'll have more medical consequences such as limb amputation, kidney failure, blindness. But also keep in mind that as our children are more obese, they'll be diagnosed at an earlier age. And so this means that for a longer period of their lives, they will have these issues that will require funding. Opposition to this bill seems to stem from a lack of funding. And I think the adage, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, is remarkably appropriate in this issue. All puns intended. Money spent on health care and other support for the ravages of obesity will far outweigh what is spent on prevention. My focus here today is not to speak of state reform or appropriating funds. My focus here today is to help our children because they can't help themselves. Our children's health is in grave danger. Those children who are obese in their childhood have up to a 70% chance of becoming obese as an adult. Those adults who have children of their own who will likely follow in their footsteps, and we will most likely see a vicious cycle continue. Institution of physical education within Oregon schools is an important first step in the fight against obesity, but our fight must be more comprehensive. Future efforts will include removing soda and junk food from our schools, implementing more healthy school lunches, and encouraging breastfeeding within our state, because recent studies show that those children who breastfeed or have breastfed greater than 6 months have a dramatic decrease in childhood obesity. We are here today to take the first step in helping our children find healthy lifestyles. We are here to ensure that their lives are not fraught with low self-esteem, poor medical outcomes, and overwhelming medical costs that they can't afford. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak on behalf of Senate Bill 228. I sincerely hope that you will join us in our fight against obesity by implementing this bill. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Will. Dr. Lace?
Yeah, hi. I'm Jim Lace. I'm a pediatrician here in Salem, Oregon at 2395 Center Street. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 228. I'm not going to repeat all the medical information that you've had so far. You've asked specifically about some questions about costs. And our local Oregon Health Plan contractor, Marion Cove Community Health Plan, just this morning I got some information from them. They have 7% of the population that's on the Oregon Health Plan locally. 7% of the population has diabetes on the Oregon Health Plan. And they've got $13 million that were charged out for care of diabetes-related conditions. This is 14% of the whole budget. We didn't break out all the other costs that are related to obesity because that's a little bit harder to get out of the information that comes out from the billing. But a rough guess is going to put that at about 20%. You expand that out to the state budget that you're talking about, somewhere in the billion-dollar range, you're talking, as Senator Courtney had mentioned, somewhere in that $200 million-plus range to care for obesity-related conditions. So we think it's a very important step to start looking at it now. This is only going to go up because we're at the early cusp of this, as you've heard about the number of children that have diabetes now and then the children who will be developing diabetes because of their lifestyle and their obesity. And if it's okay, I'll leave you with one comment. Excuse me if you find this inappropriate, but one of the things that we've talked about in our office, and we just deal with children in our office, is that we have about 20% of our children and about 20% of our staff right now have problems with obesity. Just to define what this means, it's a BMI of over 30. A BMI of 25 to 30 means you're overweight, and a normal BMI would be 18.5 to 20. And a BMI you calculate based on your height and your weight, and it's not real complicated. Children, you actually have to use the graph. To do that, we start measuring at 2 years of age, and then it goes up. And so for adults, if we're over 30, you know, we are considered obese. So it's a problem, and that's our tool that we're using to measure. There are other bills that are going to be coming up this session dealing with what we serve at our schools, looking at a pilot project to measure the BMIs in school-age children and try to give people an idea about this and also to educate our public about this is the current tool that we use to do that. But the little comment that I wanted to leave with you, and you can yell at me if you do, but it's you know, we have no children left behind, but now we have no children left with small behinds, which is going to be an issue as we get into this morning.
That was a stretch.
Sorry.
I was just wondering if Senator Morissette asked you to put in that pitch for the pilot project for the BMI.
May I speak? Yeah, the good bills that I had are no longer on the table. They're off the table. We will hopefully hear something about junk food, but the body mass index is gone.
Okay.
We can talk about that at a later time. I had some concerns about that. Committee, any questions? We really appreciate your testimony, both of you. I'll further read your testimony, and thank you both for taking time out of your very busy day.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I'm going to bring up folks that may not know each other, but you're sure going to get to know each other well now, so that we can kind of move things along. Don Zering and Jane Moore. Let's try that. Jane is neutral and Don is four. Okay. Ms. Moore, why don't we start from this side of the table?
Great. Thank you. Chair Walker, members of the committee, I'm Dr. Jane Moore. I manage the Health Promotion and Chronic Disease Prevention Programs for the Department of Human Services, and I'm happy to be here today. The department supports the concept of this bill. However, we are officially neutral because of the likely fiscal impact of this bill. You've heard a good bit of the information from my written testimony, and so, like others, I am not going to repeat that for you, but I want to make just a couple of points. I'm not sure that people quite understand that being overweight and obese in the United States is now the norm. It is the minority of adults now that are at a healthy body weight. Our children, as you have heard, are very quickly following suit. Adults are the role models for children. I have included a graph for you that was just published Friday by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, showing from the National Center for Health Statistics the percentage of children whose weight put them in the 95th percentile. Weight or height. We would expect only around 5% of children to have weight or height at the 95th percentile. As of the year 2002, we have 16% that have excess body weight. They use the term overweight for children, but in fact that relates to the term obesity as we use for adults. We indeed have a public health crisis. You've heard about the health effects. What I want to speak to is the value of physical education being a part of children's daily routine. No one has really mentioned the enormous importance and value of being physically active on a daily basis. That used to be a part of children's environment. They were able to walk and bike to school and had daily PE. That is no longer the case. And so people have to try extra in their daily routine to fit physical activity in. I want to tell just a very short story, and then I'm going to end my comments, and I'll be happy to answer any questions. I had a conversation with my sister recently who has four children in their teens and 20s, and she was giving me an update on each of them. One's a new mom, she's going back to work. One's been in a couple of car crashes. One's getting physical therapy for his knee. And then she said, the other one is just getting fatter. And she said to me, I know she needs more exercise, but I just don't have time to think about that every day. This child doesn't get daily physical activity, and she is driven to school. So she has no means in her daily routine for getting physical activity. That is the value of this bill, that it will provide that opportunity for children, no matter what their income, they are going to be able to have access to an opportunity for physical activity. So, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moore.
Happy to answer any questions.
All right, well, we'll hear from Mr. Zarin.
Thank you, Chair Walker and members of the committee. Jane and I didn't orchestrate this very well.
Mr. Zarin, can you state your name?
Oh, I'm sorry, Don Zeron.
Zeron, thank you.
And I'm a resident of Woodburn, Oregon. My testimony has the same graph that she has in there, right? Mine's in color. The only thing I would add, what clearly is the dramatic piece of that graph is, looking at the line and where it's headed, and the fact that what remediation are we putting in place to deal with that? And Senate Bill 228 is certainly one element of the remediation we would need to correct this. Anyway, again, my name is Don Zero, and I've been teaching physical education for 31 years in the Beaverton School District. The first 20 years of my career was spent at the elementary school. For the last 11 years, I have called Conestoga Middle School home. During my career, I have had the pleasure to serve my peers as a member of the board of directors of two major professional organizations that represent physical educators, the Oregon Alliance of Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance, and for the last 16 years on the board of the Council for Children's Expanded Physical Education. Working closely with these organizations has kept me in touch with the professionals that provide physical education instruction to Oregon students. And while I will focus my testimony on my experiences in Beaverton, I assure you that the Beaverton story is replicated throughout the state of Oregon. Recently, the Oregon School Boards Association dedicated one of their newsletters to the childhood obesity problem in Oregon. Frankly, they identified the problem accurately, especially the references to significant cuts in physical education as a result of state and federal education reform. In their newsletter, they included the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation recommendation that all students, K through 12, receive physical education daily in programs that stress lifelong fitness as opposed to just team sports. I appreciate OSBA's recognition of the problem and its tacit support of the intent of Senate Bill 228. In the same newsletter, two success stories were described, an overhaul of the nutrition program in Grants Pass, and the culmination of many years of hard work in Beaverton to realign our curriculum to the standards and benchmarks crafted in 2001. As a result of receiving a PE for Progress grant from the federal government, Beaverton's teachers were able to refine the curriculum to reflect a fitness lifetime activity focus, participate in staff development, and purchase equipment such as heart rate monitors, body fat analyzers, and pedometers. And recently, we produced a comprehensive set of assessments that will accurately measure what students know and can do in response to the PE benchmarks. These are great tools, and my colleagues and I are genuinely excited about the prospects. However, one sizable obstacle remains: the contact time we have with our students. The stark reality is that the Beaverton Elementary and Middle School physical educators can in no way offer the necessary instruction, opportunities for practice with proper feedback, and completion of the authentic assessments when we meet with our students only 1 to 3 times per week and have student loads of 350 to 700 students. On two occasions this year during the Beaverton School Board's public testimony, I have first predicted and then guaranteed that the majority of Beaverton students would not meet the state benchmarks in physical education. The school board and cabinet's response to this indictment has been silence. I am sure that they know I am right. So let me close my testimony today with some history that supports the need for this bill. 20 years ago, the first of two national children and youth fitness studies were released that documented a decline in youth fitness and a decrease in their physical activity levels. Our Oregon legislature responded by passing SJR 4, which recommended schools offer high-quality PE. In 1991, we began Oregon's experiment with education reform with the passage of House Bill 3565. One of the 7 critical instructional elements of House Bill 3565 was a healthy lifestyles component. Unfortunately, in House Bill 2991 in 1995, the healthy lifestyles component disappeared. In 1997, a bill to restore PE within the SIN failed to move out of committee despite the evidence from the 1996 Surgeon General's report on physical activity and health that chronicled the health care crisis we face if our citizens fail to incorporate more physical activity into their lives. In 1999, we struck a compromise with COSA and OSBA that resulted in the creation of state standards and benchmarks in PE, which meant a student's demonstrated proficiency in PE would be a requirement of the SIM. Unfortunately, just as the implementation of House Bill 3307 was to begin, House Bill 2744 passed, which eliminated PE from the SIM-required subjects. So what we've had the last 20 years is a series of small steps forward, followed by multiple steps backwards in addressing the physical education needs of our students. It is unfortunate that since this curricular area has no required accountability in terms of minutes, numbers of students, or the assessments that need to be done, a revised statute will be necessary to assist educators in producing physically educated students. The state of Oregon needs Senate Bill 228 if we wish to stem the tide of childhood physical inactivity and prevent a major cause of soaring health care costs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zeron. You've said it very well. We had, in the last 20 years, a series of small steps forward followed by multiple steps backwards. I was here in 1999 in the House and remember that bill that put PE in the SIM and was not aware that we took it back out again. So thank you for your testimony. Any comments? All right. Thank you both. Senator Morissette?
I was the vice chair of the Education Committee, and we spent 2 weeks negotiating that bill. And it disappeared, unfortunately. And Dr. Cleveland and you were involved in that. We're still trying.
All right. Thank you both very much. All right. I'm going to bring up a couple of folks who may not know each other. You will on the way up. Will Bosch. Shuzian? Ooh, I think I did that terrible, but
I don't know how to pronounce
it. Could be your handwriting. And Raquel Tombio. Okay. Well, I can't wait for you to introduce yourself on the record so I know how to get that right. And after these two testify, we'll have two opponents to the bill, David Williams and Lori Wimmer Whalen, and then we'll clean up with John Valley. Just to let you all know where we're at.
I have 5:30.
We should be done by 5.
Good.
Yeah, so I have a 5 o'clock meeting.
Okay. Chair Walker, Vice Chair Starr, thank you very much. My name is William Bosshausen, and I'm a master's student at Oregon State University. And the prepared statement that you folks see in front of you, most of the information has been touched on and echoed by many of the presenters so far, so I'm not going to rehash all of that information. The main points that I would like to reemphasize with you folks is that today's generation of children could be the first in our nation's history to have a life expectancy shorter than that of their parents. I think it would be unconscionable if we as a society do not do something in order to change this growing tide of obesity and physical inactivity. Obesity and inactivity have been tied, as we've heard, to diabetes, coronary heart disease, stroke, hypertension, as well as feelings of depression and anxiety, and just the physiological well-being that physical activity can accomplish is something that I think really needs to be emphasized. The percentage of overweight children aged 6 to 17 in this country has tripled since 1970. There's no doubt that the time for action is now. The way to fight this monster of obesity and inactivity is to foster an environment where physical activity is valued, encouraged as part of everyone's day, and viewed as just as important as being a productive employee or student. Physical education is the place where students are given the opportunity to be active daily and to develop the knowledge and skills to be happy or active for a lifetime. One thing that I would like to point out that is important to note, centers, is that today's physical education is not the everyone in their same uniform, their white socks that Senator Walker touched on, but we do use pedometers. It is lifetime physical activity, not just team sports, because one thing I did want to touch on a little bit is, Senator Walker, when you were asking about athletes being given the stay where they do not have to meet that requirement in some school districts. The important thing, in my opinion, that everyone receive physical education daily is because athletes and people who play team sports, they're very active now, but when they get older, where are they going to go? There's not the opportunity to go out and play football, go out and just play baseball. You have to learn the skills in order to be physically active, such as hiking, such as just learning about taking walks. Lifetime physical activities is what's important. I urge you, senators, to please help approve and pass along Senate Bill 228 with an eye of not only on what it will mean to today's children, but the legacy it will leave for future generations of Oregonians. Thomas Jefferson, one of our greatest American leaders and our third president, had this to say about physical activity. "Leave all afternoon for exercise and recreation, which are as necessary as reading. I will rather say more necessary, because health is worth more than learning. We are not asking for an entire afternoon of physical education, just a commitment of 30 to 50 minutes a day that will have a positive impact of many, many years of healthful life for Oregonians." Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bosshausen. And Ms. Tombio.
Thank you. Madam Chair Walker and members of the committee, good afternoon, and I thank you for this opportunity to speak with you. My name is Raquel Tombio, and I'm in the same program as Will at Oregon State University in teaching physical education. And I strongly urge you to support Senate Bill 228. As a student teacher at Philomath Elementary, I've had the opportunity to speak with my students and let them know how this will impact them. And I have comments from them to share with you that they wanted me to share with you today. Now more than ever before, we have evidence from the American Health Association and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to state unequivocally that regular physical activity reduces the risks of chronic illness and enhances wellness. Adolescence is a time when personal limits are explored and lifetime attitudes and habits are shaped. And if positive attitudes towards physical education and physical activity aren't promoted in the formative years, then they may never be adopted. Physical activity in children is very important both for its direct benefits as well as for establishing potentially lasting future behaviors, as mentioned already. Here are a few comments from my fifth grade students regarding the importance of physical education. Austin: "In PE, you get good exercise, and if you get exercise, you'll be in shape, which is very useful for when you're older. Miranda: PE helps me with better flexibility so I can be on the track team. Zach: PE is important so we can get exercise we need to stay healthy. Taylor: PE is important because you stay healthy when you run around and you learn different dances and games. I want more PE. Nathan: PE is important because we need the strength, and it's important to be healthy, and that helps us a lot. Mary O'Sullivan from Ohio State University stated that physical education seeks the development of reasonably skilled movers who have access to, regularly participate in, and enjoy participating in physical activity. Physical education seeks the development of physically literate movers who experience, appreciate, and actively support the joys and benefits of physical activity." And here my students show their appreciation for PE. Matt: "I like PE because it gets me strong and ready for other sports like football and basketball." Johnny: "I like PE because it gives us opportunities to exercise." Leland: "It's good exercise in a fun way." And Amber: "It lets you do the things that you want to do." And these are real students that will be positively impacted by this bill. The importance attached to physical education by teachers, administrators, and for U.S. senators is a likely determinant of how our students perceive the subject. By passing this bill, and thus ensuring that students will get regular physical activity, physical education, and physical education, students will see how, as adults, we also value physical activity and physical education. Through physical education, our youth can be critical consumers of sport, fitness, and physical activity in their own lives, their families, and communities. SB 228 will impact my students, your children, grandchildren, and Oregon's youth, the future of our state. So I thank you very much for your attention to this very important issue and your commitment to the health and well-being of all Oregon students. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tombio. I really appreciate you sharing the comments of your students. That's quite refreshing, and tell them that we appreciated that as well. I did have the dean of the Oregon State University College of Education job shadow me one day, Sam Stern, and he got an eyeful about how hard I work and how many times I run down the hallway every day. So he saw me get my physical exercise. Thank you. Any comments from the committee? All right. Well, we appreciate you coming, both of you.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got about 15 minutes left. We have three people left to testify, so we should be done by 5 o'clock. That would be David Williams and Lori Wimmer Whalen. I know you're the two that are the naysayers today, but that's all right. We want to hear from you.
I think they drew the short straws.
Okay. David, why don't you go first and tell us who you're with.
Great. Chair Walker, members of the committee, David Williams with the Oregon School Boards Association. And here, I apologize for having to refute testimony provided earlier. OSBA does not support the proposal as it is before you. I want to thank the committee and Senator Courtney for bringing this bill, as it is a very important issue, as you've been witness to today, the rising issue of obesity in this country. I know Senator Morissette working very hard on this issue in other areas dealing with nutrition and food choices in schools as well. And we are not here to say that this is not an issue. We're not here to defend the practice of not providing physical education in schools, except to say that we also don't defend the practice of not providing English or not providing math or not providing foreign languages. We also don't defend the practice of not providing free and reduced price lunches to children who need them in our schools, not providing transportation. These are all the sort of Sophie's choice, if you will, of school districts around the state. As Senator Deckert so aptly pointed out, we have flat funded schools for more than a decade when you hold for inflation. Districts have had to do more with less. They're not even just doing the same. They have had to do more with the growing requirements placed on them, not only by the state, but by the federal government with the accurately named No Child Left Behind, compared to other names I've heard bandied about for it. And so school districts have had to choose between the programs that have been mandated on them, the programs that they're tested for, the programs that society has deemed the core values of schools. And unfortunately, in some instances, physical education has had to fall by the wayside, and that's frankly indefensible. But it has been the decision of local boards and local communities. A gentleman was up here earlier talking about his experience on a local budget committee, and I'm sure he was there during a lot of debate about that when that budget committee was forming their budgets in the years of cutting some of these programs, about whether or not to cut PE or to cut arts or the band or sculpture. Believe it or not, when I was in high school, I actually had a sculpture class. I doubt very many schools in Oregon nowadays have sculpture. But all of these programs have had to be decided on in this era of the budget times in which we live, and it's just unfortunate. And I don't have much else to say other than that if this program is truly that important, we hope that that the legislature will find a way to raise the funds to fund it, that we do not support, OSBA does not support any unfunded mandates on our schools, any increased requirements beyond which the No Child Left Behind Act requires us, because there simply isn't the money to do it. It's a zero-sum game. We push something in one side, something is going to pop out the other side, and I'm sure there is an advocate community on that issue that pops out that will arise. You know, other than that, I don't really have a whole lot to say. I hope that everyone here, as we progress and as school districts going into their budget cycles now, I hope they'll all attend their local budget committee hearings so that they can understand the choices districts make when it comes down to budgeting based on the needs of children. And I hope that they will be advocates in those meetings. It was mentioned that OSBA has produced a, we call it a critical issues, and our critical issues for winter was on obesity, and I'll be happy to provide that to the committee. I believe it was mailed out to every member of the legislature, but I'll get extra copies and bring them by. And for anybody watching or in the audience today, it's also available on OSBA's website, osba.org. And it, again, just to highlight that this is not something we're turning a blind eye to, but it is something we believe is best solved at the local community level as districts decide where they want to put their funds, whether that be in changing the mix of foods in their vending machines and providing healthier choices, whether that be in providing more aggressive wellness education and whole child physical education in the classroom, or whether that be in providing more PE. As a side note, I will just note for the committee that in the federal reauthorization of the free and reduced price school lunch program, all districts by, I believe, July 1, 2006 are now going to be required to have a policy on student wellness, and that policy will include, is required to include things like food choices in schools, physical education, and health education. And as districts develop those policies, I know OSBA is fairly aggressive in providing sample policies to districts to help to make those choices on the local level. I hope that, again, that everybody behind me in this room and was here earlier, they will all get involved in that policy setting authority at the district level as boards begin to grapple with this issue on the local level. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Ms. Whalen?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, Lori Wimmer Whalen of the Oregon Education Association, representing 43,000 members, one of whom testified before me today here. We are, rather than opposed, I would soften that and say we're concerned, and our concerns are aligned with my colleague here from OSBA. We, too, sitting through this testimony today was very compelling, and our organization does support the issues that are brought forward. We acknowledge that research has demonstrated a link between physical fitness and mental acuity, as well as with respect to the health and weight management issues that have been addressed by those who have a lot more expertise in this than I. Our concern is, you know, not just the decade of disinvestment in public education, but the severely ramped up loss of revenues in the time since the 2001 recession. Where public education, I've said it before, but I'd like to put it on the record one more time, has lost $800 million in the last 3 years, and now is staring down a potential loss of hundreds of millions more, depending on how the budget negotiations have finally resolved for the 05-07 budget. We have lost PE teachers, and we have lost librarians and counselors and school nurses and so many others of our members who provided services that are of equal importance, not less than PE, not greater than PE, but of equal importance. And so it is the position of the association that we first hold harmless schools from further cuts, and secondly, add back or restore those programs that have been cut as a result of those budget cuts I just outlined for you. And that could be very well the physical education classes that have disappeared in lots of those communities. And that finally, we support other worthy programs that may be new ideas that come forward as a third and final priority that bear your consideration, but in that order. And so that's what I mean by not exactly opposition, more a softer version of this. We know that many of the schools who've chosen not to have the daily PE often do so because they have students at risk for lack of reading or what have you, other things that come from the home that maybe they don't have access to that are also vital interventions. And they may have put more resources there instead of in a physical education program, a daily physical education program. And that may have been, from their perspective, the best thinking in that community for that group of students. And so as we're balancing the need for the state to declare a very important statewide policy, I'd also ask your sensitivity as you take a look at what the local priorities and needs of individual communities may be with regard to these issues. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And thank you, Ms. Whalen. And Mr. Williamson, you know, you had a hard job coming up here in the face of all these people who support this bill. But I appreciate your comments, and I appreciate your sensitivity to the issue of funding. I'll just be honest with you, though. We plan on moving this bill down to Ways and Means, and hopefully we will find a way to fund this program. It seems to me that we should be able to access some funds for health care out there to help fund PE, because we're keeping people out of the health care system with a PE program. But we'll talk about it down in Ways and Means and see what we can do. But your comments are appreciated. Yeah. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if either of you could answer this question. I was wondering what if there's a standard or average length of time of a middle school class. And the reason I ask is because this is requiring for middle school 45 minutes a day. And remembering back to when I was in middle school, when you look at the time it takes to get dressed down and shower and all that, it seems like this may be scrunching it a bit to try to actually get that much physical activity in a standard class period. Madam Chair, I just say that because to put in a standard that's not reachable with the breakdown of classes, that might be something that needs to be looked at, and maybe we can get an answer to that in Ways and Means, because I'd hate to set up a standard that they can't reach without having to readjust the whole class schedule.
Okay. Could the two of you give us some research on that when the bill goes down to Ways and Means and provide an answer to this committee as well? But I want to get my committee out of here at 5 o'clock today. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Valley, here's the deal. We're going to move this bill to Ways and Means. I have an appointment at 5. I sense other members have obligations, so we'll give you 30 seconds, and then if you talk any longer, the bill's not going anywhere today.
Well, keep that in mind. I just wanted to submit written testimony to people who weren't able to attend from the Parks and Rec Association and the Oregon Health Policy Commission.
Okay, come up to the microphone and indicate what you're giving us, and then we'll vote and be done.
The other thing is all the organizations across the state have endorsed the bill. Real quickly, my name is John Valley. I'm the Oregon Government Affairs Director for the American Heart Association, and I think a lot of the testimony earlier today basically laid out that this issue is a serious issue. Obesity is the second most preventable cause of heart disease and stroke. That's why the Heart Association last year took this on after House Bill 2744 was passed, and we realized there wasn't going to be any assessment / accountability around physical education. We feel this is a compromise bill that will allow parents as well as school districts to try to hold PE accountable, in the sense that we are having some minimum physical education instruction taking place, which we think is, as has been stated earlier, a key public health issue as well as a public education issue. So I'm very proud to be associated with all the supporters today, and I think I just got into the 30 seconds, so I'll answer any questions if people have them, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
I think you did, Mr. Valley. That's pretty darn good.
Good job, I'll go home.
Yeah, we'll take a look at your written documents, and thank you very much for putting this presentation together today. Your time's appreciated. We are going to close a public hearing on Senate Bill 228. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 228. Senator Storr?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 228 to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 228 to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Madam Chair, just for the record, because we're in work session, to have the Committee on Ways and Means look at the time requirement for middle school, because if I remember correctly, when I was in middle school, the classes were like 50 minutes, and to require 45 minutes of actual activity doesn't really give the kids enough time to get dressed down and then shower and get dressed back up. So if we could just make sure we address that so we're not putting in a standard that's unreachable, I think that would be appropriate.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. I made a note of it, and we'll get some information on that. And as you know, I serve on that Ways and Means Committee,
so
I'll take a look at that, and I appreciate that. Any other comments? Okay, any objection? All right, then this bill is going to Ways and Means. We'll close the work session, and I want to thank everyone for coming today. We always appreciate your input at the Capitol. This meeting is adjourned.